Ross Lazio alongside Sam Saig for lucky episode 13 of Running the Option. The last of the regular season heading into championship week. How are you feeling, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, championship week is normally synonymous with finding the two teams that will play for the crystal ball, right? But do we really need championship week this season?
We can skip right over championship
just
week.
Just get through it. You know, I mean, it just seems like one of those weeks that conference champions will be determined, but it's a foregone conclusion, it seems, at this point, that we have our BCS title game, barring something crazy, and even that might not prevent it.
Probably not. We'll get into some of those scenarios in our second segment. I want to start off with this crazy coaching fallout that we've seen this week. Obviously, near the end of the season, teams are starting to look towards making changes. This season total, now there have been 15 coaches released of their duties. The Pac-12 had four, so a third of the conference lost its coaches this season. Mike Stoops, of course, was fired earlier in the season. This week, Dennis Erickson, Rick Neuheisel, Paul Wolf had joined him. Ron Zook at Illinois, Ohio State with the Urban Meyer hire, Penn State, of course, the Joe Paterno scandal. Mississippi parted ways with Houston Nutt. Kansas parts ways with Turner Gill, and then a bunch of guys in non-BCS teams. So just looking at this, obviously we'll get to the two big hires, Rich Rodriguez and Urban Meyer, but I want to start by asking you, when you look at this list of coaches, first of all, what are your initial thoughts? And then secondly, is there anybody on this list that you feel got a raw deal or that maybe shouldn't have been fired?
A lot of these guys, you'd have to say, we had them on a radar at some point in the last year or even the last couple years that their names were going to be associated at some point with a coaching change, unless they did something a la Mark Ritt that was able to, he was able to turn that season around in a pretty remarkable way. These other coaches, you'd have to say, in fairness to the programs that fired them, the traction that they were able to gain or not gain kind of led to where we are now. You look at a guy like Paul Wolf, that's one that has been kind of controversial in that there are plenty of people that believe Wolf had them on the upswing, that the Doba era, it took this program into such a dark place that it was going to take Paul Wolf many years to fix it. And he was in the process of building that. And he was very emotional. He was holding back the tears as a Washington State alum, as a guy that literally, you know, breathes this program. And he said, I feel like the program lost its innocence after taking one of its own out like this, because we do things in a different way than everybody else. We are patient. We take the time to get it right. And so I think he was worried that Washington State did something uncharacteristic by firing a guy and trying to hire the big name coach and pay the big dollars when that's not normally the way they do things. Maybe you could make a case for him, but honestly, when you have a record of 9-40, you know, I don't know that you can make a case for him either. The rest of the coaches, this is an expectation driven era in college football. Turner Gill, it might have been a short stay, but these kind of jobs, when you can't win or when you're losing to the degree that they are, it is what it is.
Paul Wolf is the guy that I'm on board with those people that disagree with his firing. Now, like you said, it's a 9-40 overall record. It's a 4-34 conference record. So Washington State doesn't need to explain itself. I mean, obviously they had more than enough reason to fire him, but he goes 4-8 this year, better than the 2-10 from the year before and the 1-11 from the year before that. And we've been covering the Pac-12. Obviously, it was the Pac-10 when we were running allpac10.com for a while. And I remember this Washington State team as absolutely hopeless. This was a team that was lucky to lose by less than 4 touchdowns on any given Saturday, if it was against a Division I opponent. They pick up 4 wins, 3 against Division I opponents. They had the 3-point loss against UCLA. They could have very easily won that game. They had the overtime loss to Utah. This was a competitive Washington State team. Now, if they go out and get a big-name coach like you mentioned, I understand completely. But if you hire some guy that is somewhat of a lateral move, I'd rather have stuck with the guy that was passionate about the program that was taking them in the right direction. You could say that Rick Neuheisel was passionate about the program, didn't do UCLA a heck of a lot of good because they weren't really going anywhere. Washington State was showing noticeable improvement, in my opinion, and in this landscape where there are so many good schools going after these coaches, I don't see the big name coaches choosing Washington State.
Yeah, I mean, if we might as well start at that job, because the reality is, if Washington State was able to go out and lure a guy like Mike Leach, that's obviously the name that everybody's talking about. it's a move that would show the fan base, hey, we got rid of Paul Wolf, but look who we brought in.
Definitely.
I mean, Mike Leach is obviously a guy that some schools are staying away from, given the baggage that he's endured at Texas Tech. But if you're a school like Washington State, it wasn't that long ago, because this all comes down to expectation level. Washington State was hopeless a few years ago, but it wasn't that long, if you look at the decade, that they were a very competitive program. So
they went to the Rose Bowl in this decade.
I don't know that Paul Wolf deserved another shot. I mean, it depends on the expectation level that you have for your school. Washington State was in unprecedented territory for their program a couple of years ago. They had spiraled so far down that we redefined what we expected.
That's fair. If you get a guy like Mike Leach, I retract what I just said, and I put Washington State in my top five favorite schools. I loved what he did at Texas Tech, and he's the type of guy that could turn that program around in a hurry. But on this list, you're right, there are some schools that are going to shy away from the controversy that he brings. Not all of them. And I'd say most of the schools on this list in the BCS conferences are better options.
Which is what makes it surprising that right now Leach is probably most rumored to go to Washington
State. Yes, he
is. That's the leader if you believe in the speculation. And I know a school like UCLA, they have no interest right now in Mike Leach. So in that way, right now Washington State and their athletic director they've done a good job of at least positioning themselves to be competitive in the search thus far. We'll see where they go from here. But certainly it was a move that they made to say, hey, we're kind of tired of giving ourselves this mediocre reputation for the greater part of moving forward. Let's do something to mix it up, and we'll see where they go.
That's fair. Before we get into some of the potential coaches that are on the market and the hires that have already been made, one more question on the firings I wanted to ask you. You look at Kansas, they get rid of Turner Gill after just 2 years, a short stint, like you said. Memphis gets rid of Larry Porter. Akron gets rid of Rob Iannello, both guys also just 2 years. Is 2 years enough time to fire a guy? Turner Gill 5-19, Memphis 3-21, Akron 2-22. Again, these schools don't have to explain themselves, but you've got a coach that comes in with a bunch of players that he didn't recruit, and you obviously fired the last guy for a reason. He brings his recruits in, most of them are going to redshirt. The following year, they're freshmen, they're going to make some freshman mistakes, and then you're out the door. You never even really had a chance to make an imprint.
It wasn't like this years ago. I mean, this used to be a sport that was dominated by coaches that had longevity. They came in, they got their kids into the program, they ran it the way that they saw fit, and it took 5 years to get things started. Now, we're in an era where, because of the money that's available to schools that win and are on television, and this need to get your program visible so that you can take advantage of all the luxuries that come with having a program of that stature, even a school like Memphis can't afford to go very long before they're cast aside in Conference USA and their television deal runs out and their ability to gain traction. So it's one of those things where I think that the money has gotten us to a point where we're starting to look at less and less time to give these coaches the ability to get their kids in the program. It's unfortunate. It shouldn't, you know, even at the big schools, it's surprising that we're starting to get to a point where 2 years, if you're not producing or showing positive signs, you're out the door. And the small schools have adopted that mentality.
I don't actually mind the Turner Gill firing, because Kansas, you talk about a couple years ago, that was a pretty solid team a couple years ago. He took over. He was obviously hired to turn the program around. They've tanked terribly. They're going in the wrong direction. I understand cutting ties if you don't believe that you have hired the right guy to fix things, but Memphis, Akron, what were you expecting? You couldn't have been expecting a massive turnaround overnight, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a program like Memphis, they've had their moments in the past. And, you know, they play
Conference USA tends to do that.
Sure, I mean, they've had solid teams. They're in a city that is very competitive for their fan base, and there's a great deal that can be done at Memphis. The issue is going to be, are you realistically giving yourself a chance with any coach if 2 years is what every coach that goes there can expect to get as a leash and then they're done? Because there's a lot more in that part of the country that needs to be put into a program to compete with the SEC schools that are around them and the South in general and how competitive it is to get kids. I don't know that Memphis can realistically expect much better in 2 years with a guy that comes
right in. And it sends the wrong message to some kids, because like you just said, recruiting is going to be hard enough at a school school like that. Now you're saying to the kid, oh, by the way, if you like the pitch and you like the coach, heck, he might not even be here by the time you get legitimate playing time. So it's a tricky subject, but again, you can certainly understand all three schools' decision. So let's look at the hires so far. Arizona hired Rich Rodriguez. Ohio State hired Urban Meyer. How do you like these fits?
I mean, for Urban Meyer, you know, this seemed inevitable. I mean, he's a coach that from the time that this scandal broke at Ohio State and we knew Jim Tressel was on the way out, it's just a name that we expected to be synonymous with this coaching opening. And the thing is, he's 47 years old, Urban Meyer, so he's at a perfect age. His health problems are no more, we assume. I mean, this is a guy that carries an 8-19 win percentage, 2 BCS titles. There's nothing not to like about him as a coach. The only question that will ever be with Urban Meyer is, given the demons apparently that he left behind when he left Florida and how serious of a tone he takes when he speaks about those, will he be a changed coach in the way that he says he is, where he has more balance in his life? He's not willing to burn out and leave Ohio State in 3 years for his family, that he broke a contract that he wrote up with them. I mean, Urban Meyer is a dream fit for Ohio State, and the sanctions that are coming for Ohio State are going to be nothing to Urban Meyer. He can handle those seamlessly. Scholarship reductions are not going to bother him. He's going to be able to get his kids in. He's got the coaching ties to Ohio. It's his home state. Everything you want to see in an Ohio State coach, Urban Meyer brings. The only question will be, is he a changed guy that can be there for 10 years, or will he be there for 3 and then burn out again?
Right, or worse, does he burn out and feel pressured to stay and then burn out to a point where it affects his health even worse? That is the only question with Meyer, because as a football coach in college football, you're not going to get a whole lot better than Meyer. And you have the prestige of Ohio State and the prestige of this coach. Recruiting, even in the face of sanctions, just isn't going to be a problem, especially after what we've seen USC do have some success, weather the storm a bit. Ohio State's arguably in an even better position to take on sanctions, even if they come in an extreme fashion like that. It is, you hit it on the head, all about his health, because it's very easy to say, I'm a changed man, I look at things differently. But when you get back in the locker room, and you get back to studying tapes, and you're back at home drawing up game plans, you're going to fall back into old habits. It's very difficult to completely change your philosophy, especially, let's say you lose a close game to a conference rival. Do you wonder, if I would have done things the old way, maybe I would have got that one, and then you fall back into old habits? It's not as easy as just saying you're a changed man.
I mean, yeah, a couple things about this. If you leave Florida because you're a perfectionist and you want to be perfect every year, and the pressure of doing that in the SEC is so intense, this, you could argue, is an even more pressure-filled job. Ohio State, given what this job means, especially for Urban Meyer, returning home, he's coached at the school before. This is a job where it's not going to get any less intense, especially when you're talking about the game against Michigan and how Brady Hoke has already gained a lot of momentum on the recruiting trail and on the field this season. That's a rivalry that we hope, for the sake of college football, returns to where it should be. But this is a job that, if Urban Meyer is looking for a step down in the pressure, it's not going to happen. He's got to learn how to adjust to that.
And he's going to step right in and be expected to bring a national championship to Ohio State.
Yeah,
it's not going to be,
it's
not going to be take your time, take 5 years to build the program back up. It's going to be win now.
If anything, the Ohio State fans are probably going to hope that this is similar to when Alabama hired Nick Saban. Alabama was in a mediocre place before Nick Saban came around, and he was able to take them and put them right back as a crown jewel of college football. Ohio State fans have no reason not to have the same expectation.
And the Buckeyes aren't that far removed from elite play. Actually, you could easily argue, were in better shape than Alabama was when Saban took over.
Especially with an Urban Meyer, again, he's going to have Braxton Miller, a freshman that obviously showed a lot of signs. He's seems to love him already, so he can hit the ground running.
Has a little bit of Tebow in him with his ability to run the ball, so I think it's a great fit, and I think we're both on the same page here. If Urban Meyer has found a balance in his life, this could be one of those 20 to 30 year fits that makes a lot of sense for the school and the coach. Arizona, Rich Rodriguez, not quite the perfect fit that Meyer to Ohio State is, but a good hire for Arizona, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Byrne, the athletic director, he's gained a lot of compliments already in his short stint with Arizona. He came over from Mississippi State. What's interesting about him, he was savvy enough to get on this search before anybody. I'm not saying he knew what was going to come down with all the openings, but he didn't wait to fire Mike Stoops because they knew they had to. And to get Rich Rodriguez, a brand name, at least somebody that when you talk about Rich Rod, his his time at Michigan wasn't good. There's no way to, it's 15 and 22. It is what it is. He carries a record of 120 and 84 all time. His time at West Virginia is maybe closer to what Arizona fans think he'd have here. It's a step down in the pressure cooker that Michigan was. It's back to, hey, we're giving you the keys to this entire program. You don't have to fit into our culture. You can build our culture. And in that way, Rich Rod could fit in very well at Arizona, because Arizona, they don't have a whole lot of tradition. They've never been to the Rose Bowl. It's his to take and make of it what he will. And so in that way, I'm sure he's excited.
And I think he will return to West Virginia form for those reasons. I think the Michigan job got the best of him. I really do. And I think Arizona, while it is a passionate fan base, it doesn't have any reason not to be patient. There's no return to splendor. Michigan, of course, one of the winningest schools in the history of sports. You're not quite getting that in Arizona. Do you think, from an X's and O's perspective, that he's going to have success in the Pac-12?
No question that his offensive philosophy fits in perfectly with the Pac-12. They run things similar to Oregon. The only question with Rich Rodriguez, he has no West Coast recruiting ties. How quickly can he assemble a staff that he can get out there in California, go to Texas, recruit in the state of Arizona? That's a place that he's completely unfamiliar with as of now. If he can get the staff in place to be competitive, because he's a tremendous recruiter when he knows the area, if he can do that, it'll be huge. But his philosophy and his scheme is fine.
Yeah, I think a lot of that'll have to do also with what ends up happening with these other coaching vacancies, because if these other schools, if ASU and UCLA don't bring in guys with strong recruiting ties, then Rich Rod on name alone might have an advantage. But a lot of the guys being rumored to ASU do have Arizona ties. So depending on who they go with, that could take a big step in in-state recruiting.
Right.
So let's take a look at some of the coaches that have been rumored. Now, the one name that keeps coming up on everybody's mind for a lot of these schools is Kevin Sumlin. And what's funny, we're going to get into the Houston-Southern Miss game later, but Larry Fedora's name is right up there too. And this game, the Conference USA Championship, is also a big resume booster for both of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, Sumlin's name is gold right now. He's rumored at almost every job you can imagine. Arizona State, Kansas, Ole Miss, North
Carolina.
There
will be a bidding war for him.
Yeah, Illinois, UCLA, all of these schools, there will undoubtedly be a bidding war for him. The question for him is, what will he do in relation to the rumors as they go into their BCS game potentially? Because right now, Sumlin, as you would expect, is not going to touch these rumors. He says he hasn't been contacted by anybody. He will probably keep that mentality until after their game. So if you're one of these schools and you're bidding against these other schools, you may have to wait for the greater part of a month and a half before you're able to figure out what's going to come down.
So you don't think he'll pull Brian Kelly and just sign and ditch right before the big game?
There's not a sign that points towards Sumlin doing anything before their game is over, and it wouldn't be fair to the players or the fan base. This is Houston's potentially their first BCS Bowl berth ever. I don't know why he would put that in jeopardy by ditching them right now, but it, certainly he could, but it doesn't seem like he has any desire to talk about it right now.
And there are going to be so many teams fighting over him that he's not in a position to make an immediate move.
Yeah, the question with Sumlin, he's a tremendous offensive coach, and there's no doubt that he's so far had the CEO skills, as they say that you look for in a coach. He's got a 35-16 record. The question for him is going to be, how much of his success was put in place by Art Briles before him at Houston? How much of his success was determined by Case Keenum?
Well, look at last year.
Right, I mean, Case Keenum goes down. They finished the year without a bowl game. What about that in relation to how good of a coach he is? That's the only question. Certainly, scheme-wise and with what you look for out of a coach with his recruiting, he's been very solid, and there's a reason he's one of the hottest young coaches in the game. But he also inherited a good situation that was put in place before him and had one of the best quarterbacks of all time at his school.
Where if you had to guess, do you know where you
it looks like Arizona State's the leader for Sumlin right now, because UCLA is still hell bent on Chris Peterson.
Offered up to $4 million, as the rumors are reporting.
And the thing is, if you look at that job, Peterson turned them down once before. There's no reason still to believe that he wants that UCLA job. If he turns it down soon, then UCLA would put themselves right back in the mix for Sumlin. It's those two right now.
Yeah, I don't think Chris Peterson is going to leave Boise State. His name comes up obviously every time there's there's a coaching position too, but it's not about the money for him. It's about the fit. And I just don't know that there's going to be a much better fit than Boise State, especially when you consider it's all his players. He's got this team playing great, and they're moving on to bigger and better things now.
If Peterson was going to leave to go to UCLA, I don't know that a couple of years later makes a difference. He turned them down once, and you have to ask yourself, what have they done to improve themselves to this point? I mean, just recently, Rick Neuheisel went on the Colin Cowherd show and said that from a financial standpoint, there are some things that Carl Durrell wanted, there are some things that he wanted, and there are some things that the next coach is going to want that as of now administration hasn't put in place at UCLA. If they don't continue to make improvements to their facilities and to what they want
to
do.
There's more than just coaching salary to the amount of money it takes to get to that elite level.
And UCLA just hasn't gotten to a point yet where I think Peterson wants to touch that.
And what about the Ole Miss job? You know, Houston Nutt, that didn't work out. That's an SEC position. The name I keep hearing is Kirby Smart, Alabama's defensive coordinator. That seems to make sense. Anybody else you think in line for
that job? Yeah, it's funny. Kirby Smart, some people think he's already got that job locked up. I mean, I've heard names like Gus Malzahn, as you'd hear, Larry Fedora, which is a much better fit regionally with him at Southern Miss. Mike Leach comes up for that one. And Hugh Freeze, a name at Arkansas State, the head coach there. That's a really hot name. Also, a very underrated coach that's quickly skyrocketing up everybody's list. But right now, Kirby Smart makes the most sense, and he may even have that job within the next few days.
Now, Mike Leach, we mentioned a little bit. We were talking about Washington State being the front runner. Is this the year that he finally gets back into the coaching game?
You would think so. I mean, his name is coming up in so many of these openings. If I had to guess where he would end up, if it's not going to be at UCLA since they've ruled him out, Arizona State has shown some interest. I don't know how serious they are about him, but it seems like Washington State and Kansas are pretty keen on trying to get him. For that reason, if he wanted to make an entry back into coaching, I think one of those jobs, specifically the Washington State job, would interest him because they already do have some things in place that fit his system. There are some quarterbacks and receivers there that Paul Wolf developed that I think if Mike Leach wanted a place in the Pac-12 where it's already pass friendly and the defense sometimes is lacking, which, you know, if there's a criticism of Mike Leach, it's that he doesn't always focus on defense or even a defensive coordinator. If he could get a good defensive coordinator and go to Washington State, it might be the right fit.
What about a guy like Justin Wilcox, Tennessee's defensive coordinator? A lot of these guys on this list are offensive coaches. Here's a guy that's a defensive coach, doesn't have the head coaching experience, but could bring a solid defensive stability to one of these programs that needs it.
Definitely. I mean, for me, a team like Kansas could use a guy like him because if you're
going to
get away,
one of the worst years we've seen in non-defense.
If you're going to get away from Turner Gill, not a reason in the world to go anywhere other than defense. And look at a guy like Wilcox, who's had some success at Tennessee and was obviously a very hot commodity at Boise State and has done some great things. So I think he's a guy that you should look for.
Mike Bellotti, does he get back into coaching?
Yeah, it's funny. With Bellotti, he's been rumored at UCLA. He's been rumored at Arizona State and Washington State, etc. The Pac-12 is probably where he'd end up. But it depends on how old or young these teams want to go. I mean, Bellotti is a guy, especially a team like Arizona State coming off of a tenured coach like Dennis Erickson. I don't know that they want to look that direction. It depends on how senior you want to go. A lot of times, programs coming off of instability want to go younger. Bellotti's name is still a very solid coaching name. I mean, he built Oregon into what they are now, but it depends on what school goes that route.
I feel like UCLA would be a good fit for him, more so than say Arizona State or Washington State, but I'm not 100% sure if that's who they go after if they fell out of the Peterson race.
Yeah, it certainly is a name, though, that they are looking at, I would imagine.
Paul Christ, Wisconsin's offensive coordinator, another guy that could get some offense going. Ron English's name at Eastern Michigan has come up. Oregon's offensive coordinator has also come up. A lot of good offensive coaches out there.
I mean, for when you talk about a guy like a Sumlin or even a Fedora, those guys have come up for the North Carolina job. But when I look at what North Carolina is looking at, Everett Withers, the guy that's already there as an interim head coach, may be the way they look, but this gets into regional ties. Skip Holtz at South Florida might be a good fit for North Carolina. There's a coach at Cincinnati named Butch Jones that could fit into that job. These are names that, when you talk about a lot of these openings, it makes sense to get regional. Even though, you know, teams are looking more and more national in their coaching searches, there still is a fit that makes sense regionally. So you have to look at even a program like Illinois. Well, what direction would Illinois go? They're they're also possibly going to look to stay regional now that Ron Zook is out of there. And so it all depends on kind of the fit of the region and the coach itself. So
let's wrap this up with, you look at Ohio State was considered one of the most dangerous jobs to take because of the potential sanctions that were coming down on them. But that was obviously surpassed by miles by the Penn State job. And not only do you have this black cloud over the program, but you're replacing Joe Paterno. What does Penn State do, and who would even be willing to take this job?
I mean, the only name that anybody has even mentioned is Dan Mullen, who's at the top of their list, and he doesn't want to touch that right now. And you can understand, he's got some good things going at Mississippi State, and I'm not sure he has a clue how to even address this. But, I mean, Dan Mullen is a Pennsylvania native. He has coaching experience in the Northeast and the Midwest. And the big thing, he's 39 years old. So if you're looking for a really fresh start and an opposite of the Joe Pa era, that might be a good place to go. I mean, I think outside of that, the names that you brought up, Illinois is going to look at these guys too, but Paul Chryst, that's a fit regionally. Michigan State defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi may be rumored for both jobs. Rutgers head coach Greg Schiano, Toledo coach Tim Beckman. These are the guys that for those Big Ten jobs, either Penn State or Illinois, you have to look at that as a short list of guys.
I almost wonder if Penn State will eventually settle on an alumni that maybe doesn't have the perfect head coaching resume, but somebody that loves the school, that wants to take on the burden of returning the school to splendor, as opposed to a guy that doesn't have ties to the school that has, this is so much to deal with.
I mean, the reality is, if you're being fair about historical implications, Penn State is the best job available.
Absolutely.
So the question is, will somebody out there view it as that, or view it as what it's become in the last few months, which is obviously an unprecedented place to be? That's maybe what Dan Mullen is mulling over in his head. Do I take a job that historically is the best job on this list, or do I inherit something that I have no idea how to handle? And every coach is going to have to make that decision.